Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, joined as always by magnificent Max Montana. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
Good, good, good. So you've just gotten back from a couple of big weightlifting meets. We had the Pan Ams two weekends ago. Pan Ams.
Yep.
Then so you were in the Dominican Republic there, coaching Team Juggernaut's Alyssa Ritchie, and then turned right back around to go to Kansas City for the 2018 USAW Nationals. And on today's episode, we're going to be recapping both of those events and how it went for the team and just sort of an overall look at USA weightlifting and the whole process. But before we get into that, I think we would be remiss if we did not address the elephant in the room, some weightlifting news that came out over this past weekend at Nationals. And I'm sure plenty of people have asked you about, Max, and plenty of people have asked me about as well, and that's concerning Colin Burns, obviously a longtime member of Team Juggernaut and affiliated with us for a long time. And in June 2017, we had learned that there was an ongoing Safe Sport investigation of Colin Burns, and though the details were still unknown to us at that time, it was clear that it had become time for us to go our separate ways. We didn't publicly address it then to avoid interfering with the process of the investigation in any way, but this past weekend, it became public knowledge that a decision to suspend Colin for sexual misconduct had been made by Safe Sport. And Safe Sport is this kind of governing body watchdog for sexual misconduct in sport. So while we have learned many more details of the case over this past weekend, we prefer to refrain from sharing those at this time until the suspension is officially announced and everything. But we feel that his removal from the Nationals venue is very telling about the severity of what's to come. Our support goes out to the woman affected by his actions, and we are glad to see USA Weightlifting and Safe Sport taking this matter seriously. We hope that justice in this case can now happen and that a resolution comes swiftly. So, that's kind of all we'll say about that for right now. Obviously, a very unfortunate situation, and for the girl involved with this, and so if you ask us questions about it, we're not gonna answer, but I'm sure there'll be more information coming shortly. So getting on to the more fun part of things, the actual lifting. First up would be the Pan Ams. So you were down there.
Yeah.
Dominican Republic with Alyssa. Tell us a little bit about Pan Ams and Alyssa's performance there.
So overall, Alyssa's physical shape was great. She came into the meet in solid form. Snatched well, hit 78 at 48, which is a good snatch for her. Went 3 for 3 there. And then only made one clean and jerk at 94. Made the 98 on her second and was kind of overturned. Overturned and didn't make another after that. So as a physical condition, I think she was in good shape. She came in prepared, mentally she was focused. But from an overall perspective, I would give the entirety of our performance kind of a lower grade. And I think a lot of that was really just more a byproduct of, poor coaching choices on my part, some miscommunication stuff in the back room, and just a general around certain subjects, certain things going on. So I think, overall, I would say we didn't do what we had set out to do, obviously. And she ended up in fourth place, which was kind of an unfortunate series of just, a lot of little incorrect decisions and bad calls. some mismanagement to some things that just kind of added up to this less than stellar performance. Not to take anything away from Alyssa, I feel like she lifted fantastic, put her heart and soul into it, did the best she possibly could on that day. You know, that's kind of the bummer when those happen, where, you know, it's not a physical thing. It's just it's all the little stuff that didn't get sorted out properly in order for her to perform or for her to place where she should have.
Yeah, and you know, for those of us who are watching from home on the live stream, and there was definitely some confusion during Alyssa's session because the live stream was one, the announcing was in Spanish. You couldn't necessarily see what weight was on the bar all the time, and they were cutting back and forth between the back room and the platform. So, you know, I couldn't tell at the time if it was a bad connection or they just missed showing that second clean and jerk for her, but we didn't see it. And then in the comments, some people are saying she made it, some people are saying she missed it. So it wasn't until several hours later that I saw a video that you sent me in what looked like a very strong lift, and a lift that got three white lights. So very unfortunate for that to have been overturned. And then the other thing, you know, as you're watching the live stream and they're cutting back and forth between the front and the back, is there's, you know, there's a lot going on in the back room at any meet, but as a U.S. you know, team member, which Alyssa has now been at the World Championships and the Pan Ams twice, there seems to be even more going on there. Maybe more cooks in the kitchen. But as most of the people listening to this, you know, will likely never be in the back room at an international weightlifting meet, maybe describe some of the differences at the international level compared to when it's, you know, we're at American Open or something, and it's just you and Alyssa.
Well, you know, when it's me and Alyssa, I always have one of my two people counting for me, either JP, my assistant coach, or Joanne, my boss. so, you know, those two always—they know my style, and we have a continual dialogue as to what we're doing and saying. And so, you know, they get exactly what I need from an informational standpoint about attempts and counts and this and that. Internationally, what happens is, you get assigned. There's a couple of head coaches, Demos and Mike Catone, two very, very accomplished people in weightlifting, obviously, and very, very good at what they do, just work in a different style than I'm used to, and not so much to say that it's a good style or a bad style, it's just different. In this situation, too, Pan Ams, one thing I like to do at breakfast is that I believe everyone in the back should have a specific job and should have purpose, and they should do that job exactly, you know, and only that job. You don't want everybody thinking they need to do everything, because then it gets confusing. But in the back room, you know, at these international meets, sometimes you're going to have a bunch of different stuff going on. The security might be different. You might have more people on your team in there than you need. You might have less in some cases. But you're going to end up in a situation that's just very different than nationals, where nationals is pretty calm. There's not as much stuff going on in terms of the lifters kind of jockeying around or taking jumps you had no idea about, because you're against people you don't see every day. In nationals, you see these competitors on a regular basis on Instagram, and you know their coaches and stuff. So there's a level of unpredictability. There's a level of, you know, learning the other coaches and those kind of things that kind of factor into the way you play your strategy out. And so I think, you know, for people that have never been there or probably not going to be in the back room at those meets, it's a different thing. You know, I think you got to be ready for that and be aware of that. It's a very different beast than the back room at nationals.
So I'm going to come back to some of those back room frustrations and some things that you identified there. But before we do that, just kind of a quick overview of the rest of Pan Am's, you know, a women's team championship there. So the women are on a roll internationally with the world championship and the Pan Am championship.
Yep.
You know, as a general weightlifting news, because this wouldn't be the Jug Life podcast if we didn't talk about some drug testing related things. But 29 competitors were removed from the competition for failure to file whereabouts. And part of drug testing through WADA and for international sport and Olympic sports, as well as high level IPF lifting, is this thing called the Adams List, and they've got apps on their phone and whatever, and they gotta update. All right, here's where you can find me for this specific 1 hour a day, every day, all year. And so it's not, yes, that you can miss two things with that and it not count as a test, but we won't get into too much of that right now. Yeah. Basically, there was 29 lifters who had not been doing that the way that they needed to, so they were removed from the competition. So kudos to the IWF and WADA. They're fighting the good fight and trying to trying to keep weightlifting in the Olympics for a little bit longer. But with that, I think the standout performances had to have been Sarah Robles and Wes Kitts, Pan Am champions. Yeah. Harrison Morris, Maddie Rogers, CJ Cummings, all medalists, multiple medalists, but medalists in the total. Kane Wilkes, some of his best lifting, particularly in the snatch, in several years. Caitlin Hogan, always solid. I think just good lifting all around. In Alyssa's session, she was joined by Haley Reichert, who's so talented young lifter, great coach Dane Miller. So overall good job for USA Weightlifting and all those lifters involved.
Yep.
So
yeah.
So back to some of these frustrations, and you talked about miscommunication, a lack of understanding between all these different parties who don't work together on the daily basis, and some problems. But I'll let you talk about those. So
I'll start kind of from the beginning where plans went awry. Initially they had set up an extra hotel room for everybody to camp out at because the venue was about an hour drive from the resort. The extra hotel room was a nicer room. They knew they had hot water there. And then they set it up, so it was about 20 minutes from the actual venue. So it gave the listeners a chance to prepare mentally and kind of have a nicer situation, get everything they need beforehand. The one downside was that we didn't have a scale there for Alyssa. And we were supposed to bring it. Somehow didn't end up on the truck or whatever with everyone, and so we were waiting at night. And to make a long story short, probably a bad decision in hindsight to have a hotel courier take the scale to her that night instead of the team leader. And what that ended up doing was, as we kind of expected, or as I expected, the scale didn't get there. So when you're 48 kilos and you need to weigh in at 48 kilos on the nose. If any of you have ever done a weight cut, you know how challenging it can be to do it properly. And there's an effect that kind of happens when, if you overshoot it, meaning you continue to lose weight too much or too fast, or you're doing it at the wrong speed, then it almost acts like a sort of cascading effect where it gets worse and worse as you go. And then you weigh in, sure, you make weight, but you're way too light. And when we're talking about 48-kilo lifters, too light is anything under a few grams off of 48 kilos. Ideally, you should come in right at 48.00 on the nose at that time and be done. The scale didn't get there to her, so she really didn't know where her weight was supposed to be. That was a real big frustration on the part of, sort of global mismanagement of stuff. And then, she woke up in the morning, she was supposed to be 48.48, ended up being 48.0. And, like I talked about earlier, it just kind of got worse from there. We tried to counteract it, but we didn't know exactly what it was supposed to be. And she weighed in about 300 grams underweight. And I think that really kind of took a lot out of her clean and jerk. Even if it's just a couple of kilos, that adds up. 2 kilos is the difference between silver or gold or even fourth place in gold. That was unfortunate. From there, I think the other kind of main thing was just in general, know, the established plans for, hey, what is it that I'm saying? What does it mean? How do I coach? What am I counting? What does it mean? Those kind of things, interactions between a lot of coaches or just a lot of people. You know, the three main things that I kind of talk about that really had a big impact on me after this meet that, you know, I'm stealing directly from Jack Clark, that really, like, after this meet, I saw all these areas I failed at or all these areas that we kind of were subpar in, and I look at the stuff Jack Clark told us, and I realize, like, yeah, there's a lot of these areas I'm just not living up to or not doing the best job, and those three areas for me are a common glossary, meaning when one coach on the team says, you know, two attempts out, what does that mean? And everybody on the team knows exactly what that means. So if I say I'm two attempts out, does that mean there's two lifters that I lift? Or does that mean I'm the next person after this lifter? Those kind of things should have been sorted out. And having a common glossary amongst all coaches, amongst everybody, I think is really a key to being successful. The second thing was leadership. That leadership is the ability to make everyone around you more productive. And a lot of that comes from, you know, when you're in the back room or when things are going on, is somebody bringing energy into the situation and helping everyone figure out what their jobs are or helping everyone do their job better? Or are they coming in and they need you to take over some of their stuff, or they are just not contributing? Or is it just a situation where they're not making anyone more productive or anyone better? Sorry, anyone worse or better, they're just neutral, then they don't need to be there, right? And so, you know, those are kind of the big ones there. And then, you know, finally, the last one was the idea that sports teams and family are different things. And there's two different kinds of love that go on between those. One is unconditional. Your family and the love you have for your family is unconditional. You know, your uncle may be a total fuck-up, but, you know, he's your uncle. Or your brother might be, you know, a dick, but, like, that's your brother. You're always going to have love for them. It's always going to be part. You can't change that. Sports teams are not families, and they shouldn't be treated as one. They are a professional organization that has a responsibility to each member. There's a standard of conduct. There's a standard of performance. There's all these different standards that must be met. And if you don't meet those standards, you don't belong on the sports team anymore, right? And so there's an expectation that you are going to live up to that standard. So those three things kind of just hit me after the whole thing. You know, Alyssa went into it. The coaches all had kind of different ways of doing things, different terms. There's the glossary problem. That kind of fell apart, I think. Then the second thing was the leadership thing. I think that we had so many people in the back at one point in time. There's just a lot of people saying the same thing at the wrong time and getting too many people confused, you know. I know the other 48 there, Haley Reichert, at one point said there's like four or five coaches telling me what to do on the lift. And they may all be right. That's not even to say they're incorrect in what they're saying. It's just you don't need that. That's not making her more productive. It's making her less productive because she now has to think about a bunch of things. She's confused. So the third one, too, is just the general, standards everyone's living up to, right? When the shit hits the fan, who's the guy that has put his name in to be the guy who cleans up the shit or does the shitty job when it counts? And, you know, I feel like that was kind of one of those things where, yeah, it happened. Yeah, I feel like with the scale was a good example of, like, hey, you know, that's kind of the reason that we have a team leader. Why do we have to not live up to the standard of if it has to get done, I'm the guy who does it, right? The buck stops here with me. So, you know, overall, not a terrible performance, just not what we were capable of. And the basic thing there, the basic failures on those parts, were not a matter of training, were not a matter of the athlete, or even really of the circumstances. It was just a matter of a lot of little, you know, pieces that didn't come together and so you didn't have, you know, a structure. You didn't have a plan executed the way it should have been. And, you know, we ended up paying for it on the ranking, you know, fourth place.
Yeah, and
I believe in the words of.
Go ahead.
In the words of Ricky Bobby, if you're not first, you're last.
Yeah, but you're able to take a lot of good things away from that and apply them at Nationals for, you know, what turned out to be a very successful Nationals, and we'll talk about that here in a second. As Max is talking about Jack Clark, if you're not familiar with him, you could listen to episode number 94 of The Jug Life with Jack Clark, who is the head rugby coach at the University of California, Berkeley. Has just an incredible record. I want to say 23 out of the last 34 national championships they've won, all under his guidance. And we got to talk with him, just an incredibly impactful talk. I think for both Max and I, as coaches, as leaders, as business people,
yeah,
he just has a ton of good information. So check that episode out. It's a short episode packed with good stuff. We also posted an excerpt from that called What is Leadership, in which he talks more about those specific ideas. But that's episode number 94 of The Jug Life with Jack Clark. So you were able to take some of the Clarkisms on to the next weekend at Nationals. So, you know, let's maybe talk about those ideas that you applied to the group as a whole, and then we'll get into each lifter as an individual performance.
Yeah, so, you know, and I'll just say this about Jack Clark, so I don't go too long on it, but one thing that really struck me about what he told us and the talk and everything we had with him, a lot of what he's saying is really, like, it's very straightforward. There's nothing like, hey, here's some magical trick or something. It's all just very straightforward information. And in concept, it makes a lot of sense. It's the practice and the execution of it that makes it so good, though.
Yeah.
If you practice and execute the things he says, you have success. And it's not the flashiest thing in the world. You know, it's easy to say, oh, okay, that's cool. Everybody knows to, like, be a team, and everybody knows these. But he's saying, hey, define exactly what team is, and then you need to live up to that. And you need to do it every single day with all of your actions. So that stuff really just stuck with me a lot. As far as applying it to the entirety of the team and applying it on a global scale, I think the big thing that we did going into Nationals was we sat down and we did, as Jack Clark would say, an audit. We did an audit of the entire competition, and we did an audit of ourselves and our what we have. So we were very realistic with everybody's numbers. What can you physically do? What are you ready for based on the training you've done? And then what is everyone going to do in this competition? And so we planned accordingly. The other thing too, we planned. We sat down and planned everything we were going to do. We discussed a common glossary between all of the lifters and JP and I. So everyone knew what every term meant, what every idea meant. If I said to you, hey, you know, tell me how you feel, feeling tired, feeling weak, feeling hungry, I know exactly what those words are. And then, you know, we talked about leadership with people. We talked about, you know, people need to do their job and only their job, and they need to do it in a way that makes everyone else around them more productive. So JP wasn't interacting with the athletes. He was just talking to me. He would count. He'd come back to me, tell me what the count was. We would discuss the options, and we'd only discuss the important stuff. We didn't sit there talking about all the possibilities or the what-ifs. We talked about what we knew we could do. We talked about what the competition we expected them to do, and then we made a plan based around that, and we adjusted it as we saw fit during the meet. All things that I think exuded leadership from everyone.
Like one man famously said before a session in the 2016 American Open, you coach, you count, you load. Everyone got it?
Yes.
But it sounds like everyone actually got it a little bit better this time.
That was your Jack Clark. That was your Jack Clark. You channeled Jack Clark on that one.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember exactly what you're talking about now. Well placed. But yeah, so, you know, those things were the huge ones. And then that third one, that family team thing, that hit me really hard when he said it. It really made a ton of sense because I've always felt something like that. I didn't like when people say, you know, we did it, fam, or that, you know, we're a family and this and that. It just doesn't seem right, doesn't fit right. it absolves you of any accountability for your actions. You can be a dirtbag, and if you're a part of the family, you're always going to be part of the family. I have no tolerance for clubs and organizations that tolerate people's behavior that's subpar, or that's, you know, really just not good. You have these people on teams that kind of are led on there, and I'm not even talking about anyone in particular, but just led on and stay in a group where it's like, wow, the character of that whole group is brought down by one or two individuals. And so I talk to everybody about, you know, what you're expected to do to be part of this, what you're expected, what's expected of you as a performance, as a individual, professionally, all these things. I even made the commitment to everybody that I wasn't going to throw a chair in the warm-up room if something didn't go my way. overall, those are the global things we do with everybody, and we just focused on executing on those principles rather than being concerned with how much weight we were lifting or where we placed or what everyone else did or who got red lights or who got a jury overturn. We just focused on those principles and applying them and executing them as best we could. From an individual standpoint with each person, it manifests itself differently, right? Not everybody is going to have the same requirements for a coach to say, hey, you know, you gotta straighten up your attitude more. You gotta be part of this more, because everyone's a little different. Overall, the competition was a good, successful meet for us. With the exception of Fox, Mike Fox is our first guy at 56. He did not total. He bombed out, unfortunately. But you know, we sat down with every single lifter before the meet, to discuss our plan and discuss our glossary and make sure everyone was on the same page. And then after the meet, immediately after they finished, we sat down with them again to talk about, hey, what were the, and this is an idea that I created completely on my own without the help of Chad Smith. what are your top three things you did this competition today, and what are the bottom three? And top three meaning not like, oh, I won, that's a thing, but what were the things you executed on above and beyond what you normally would? How well did you do those things? And then the bottom three are, what are the things that you could have done a better job of, but you didn't do, right? And that was a huge motivating factor for everybody, I think. Once we started getting people into it, they all bought in. Everyone on the team is super open-minded. They're all very, very cooperative and very coachable people. They bought in, and it was like, you know, it was like one step after the other. People just start falling in line, doing exactly what they knew was right. They really enjoyed us talking about the plan and saying, hey, here's what six attempts we think you're going to do. Here's the six we think you're going to need to win or to get a medal or to do this or that. And these are the priorities. And your goal is to live up to the standard of this. We didn't say, hey, you have to lift 100 kilos to be on the team. We said, what is it going to take for you to make lifts? Well, I got to lock out my elbows better, as an example. Okay, so then you need to focus today on the locking out of your elbows. You put that as priority number one for you. And if you do that every single time, you're going to get to that 100 kilos, you're going to make it locked out, and no problem, right? But if you focus only on the negative of, I don't want my elbows to bend, and I'm going to go in this and snatch 100, it's just going to be a mess. So
yeah,
you just started everybody from the...
I think what's particularly important too, and this, you know, the post-meet meeting, this is the idea of the performance audit from Jack Clark. As you know, people get better in this process of evaluating themselves, and you know, as people listening maybe want to apply this with their own training or people that they coach, it's very important in this to make things that are measurable and quantifiable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it would be simple to say, well, I didn't snatch well, you know, or I didn't clean and jerk well. But why is the
yeah.
question to be
yeah.
answered, so that you can have, you know, so if the lockout, or let's say the drive and the jerk is something that's lacking for someone, you know, one of their three things isn't going to be, well, I didn't jerk well, so I didn't focus on, you know, where the weight is in my foot in my dip and drive. Like it's something that that they can actually address, you know, when they when they go back home to begin training for the next meet, that they can specifically focus on that thing, and then that will be quantifiable in heavier jerks. And that was something, you know, to sidetrack from the Jack Clark, who is all that is man, but another really exceptional coach that I got to spend time with up in the Bay Area was a guy named Bob Lattiser, who's the coach at De La Salle High School, the winner of 151 consecutive high school football games. And every week they would do these commitment cards, and they were, you know, little 3x5 note cards that they would write a goal for practice, a goal for the game, and a goal for their weight room training every week. And they would go to one of their teammates, you know, in this meeting that they had, and say, all right, you know, Max, I commit to you to stay 10 minutes after practice to work on, you know, my pass block footwork. You know, I commit to you in the game, you know, to play through every whistle, you know, so I'm not loafing at the end of the play. And I commit to you to bench, you know, whatever weight for five reps this week. Things that are immediately measurable, because if you just say, you know, I commit to you to play a great game, like, well, what the fuck does that mean? You know, so I think that that's going to be really the important step too in the performance audit process, is that people are making measurable goals that they can quantify the improvement of.
For people, if you're listening and thinking about applying this, practical stuff and everything starts at the most basic level, right? Is the real problem that your hip is messed up, or is the problem that you're not doing your breathing and rehabilitation exercises first? And is the problem that you're not doing that because you're coming to the gym late? So really, what's the beginning there of all that? Is showing up on time. So, you know, we went through this process with everybody. In addition to everybody auditing themselves, we audited them and we audited ourselves as coaches. And we all came up with the same stuff. The process was very effective. And I think really just a great, positive team-building experience for everybody. Overall, from a performance standpoint, we had a solid showing from our team. Janice Okamoto in the 53s. Made a PR total. She snatched a competition PR snatch, competition PR clean and jerk, and made a great, great fight and solid attempt with apparently some funky noise when she missed on a big clean and jerk for her 98, which would have been really, really solid for her. So really good job. She put forth everything she had into it and did well, and actually improved quite a bit. That 53 class, you know, when we watched that, it was an interesting class because it was basically the changing of the guard. You had an Olympian, Morgan King, in there, who I don't even know if she placed, to give an example of how the class has changed.
She did. She got third. I think Courtney got fourth.
Okay, she got third. Yeah, and then I think Courtney got third. So Bachelor came in third, and then either way, the point was, you know, you've got King and Bachelor, seasoned veterans, not winning it, coming in the top three, and on the lower end of that from a totals perspective. But then Jordan De La Cruz is just, you know, excellent job.
Yeah, Jordan definitely one of the standouts of the whole weekend. So four for six for Janice. PRs across the board. You know, that's a very positive day, and you know, with her focus being all towards weightlifting.
Yeah.
Now with the ending of CrossFit, she'll only continue to improve. I shouldn't say only to weightlifting, because she also has to focus on skate lifting, figure skating weightlifting combination.
She's been featured in three CrossFit fails videos. That was her claim
Yeah, so next up after Janice was Christy Brewer in the 63 kilo class. So talk about Christy a bit.
Christy had a fantastic day. She performed really well. She executed. She made a PR snatch, a PR clean and jerk. Those are both comp PRs, the only ones that count. And did really well. Got herself a bronze medal in the total and a silver in the clean and jerk. She was a great example, along with pretty much everyone else, just a great example of executing a plan, kind of being realistic of what our abilities are, and executing a plan based around that and not based around what everyone else is doing. We set up her openers. We put in 83 and 112 in the clean and jerk, knowing that the 112 would kind of maybe get everyone kind of riled up and maybe think they had to push a little harder in the snatch because they know she can do it. They might think that we're just going to take some big numbers. So I think that's a great example to kind of expose where you know a lot of coaches and lifters are going to behave a certain way. Generally, people think they have to be really, really aggressive and take the winning lift rather than let the opponent lose the winning lift or miss the winning lift. And so, we did that. We executed all those things. It was a stacked class where everybody was competitive, but if you looked at the result, only one girl made her third snatch. So that was very telling of us selecting the right strategy for that session. There was a couple people that had a chance to beat her and took the wrong weight, took a couple kilos more than they needed for that medal, and then missed it. Very much kind of watching, almost like from the other side of where I was at Pan Ams, where we're taking numbers to try and get that gold and miss it, and then you watch other people do the same thing. I think you probably would say the same, is that it's probably challenging for people because they can't step back far enough to look at things objectively and say, yeah, you know what, this is really what I'm capable of, and if I maximize that, I'll have a good total, versus saying, oh shit, everyone's going up, I better go up too.
Yeah, and I think the next lifter we'll talk about, Cody Carlson, is a perfect example of that. Yeah. So just to close out, Christy, 4 for 6. She was 5 for 6,
yep.
But got a snatch overturned.
Yeah, she pressed out. She got 2 whites, then the jury overturned it.
Yeah, so four for 6 for her. Competition PRs across the board. Christy is 36 years old, mother of two. You know, taking care of her daughters and doing awesome stuff there. Make sure, that her youngest daughter, Kalea, is on the autism spectrum, which one of my nieces is as well. So it's always really cool for me to see the stuff Christy's doing with her, with all the different therapies and everything that they're working through. And they have a new little clothing brand to kind of represent for Kalea and all that. So go on to Instagram and follow them. It's I'm not quite sure how to say it, so I'll just spell it. It's just AUYACO is it. So it's like out. AUYACO. Go follow that on Instagram and check it out. So that was Christy Brewer. So Cody Carlson.
Yeah.
Cody Carlson's an 85 kilo class lifter. And the strategy that Max was just talking about of kind of being, just focused on yourself and doing what you can do, not worrying about the lifts that other people are making. Cody embodied, Cody's session embodied that to the fullest and paid off well for him.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't mention earlier, but I basically said to everybody, our number one goal for this meet, for everyone, is to have a successful competition. And I told them that my definition of success is that when you walk away from here, you're leaving with the intent and the motivation to participate in what you're doing already a little bit more. Meaning, I want you to walk away feeling like you have left some in the tank and that you can capitalize on it later and you're motivated. I don't want you to leaving, even if you win, I don't want someone leaving feeling like, well, you know, oh, I only did this or I only did that or whatever, that guy missed. Like, you don't want negativity like that. You want someone walking away positive. So that was Cody's first goal. Let's have a successful meet, and then, you know, let's look at, like we talked about before, let's look at our abilities, what we can do, what everyone else can do, and let's execute on those. He went 6 for 6, had a great day, won gold in the clean and jerk, gold in the clean and jerk, bronze on total, and made really solid lifts all across the board, lifting within his abilities. You know, he did 141 and 180 at the camp a while back, and we knew he could do those numbers, but we chose to just play our strategy the way it was. Walking away from something with a positive mental outlook and walking away with the motivation to just jump in full bore to things is really important. And Cody, you know, he mentally switched as a lifter after that. Watching his expression, watching who he was before, the way he talked about stuff, the way after, was just a total change in personality and his perception of what he needs to do. So that was really, really ultimately probably the most successful performance we had, just because it hit him so much, you know, in the feels, I guess you could say.
Cody did 137, 178. Are those meet PRs for him?
Yeah, those are meet PRs.
A lot of meet PRs, and you know, watching Cody, particularly in the snatch, his lifts look pretty comfortable. Like he was looking sharp there. And you know, as we talk about this strategy of like just making your lifts and not worrying so much about what other people are taking and letting that affect your attempts, there's going to be times, you know, where that could, for lack of a better term, like backfire, where maybe you take 1 kilo too little or something, and you're walking away seeing someone lift the way that Cody did and be like, oh, you know, but if I would have done 140, 180, then I would have gotten first or second. And, you know, just historically watching the 85 A session at the last several nationals and American Opens, like banking on other people missing is a good bet, because normally that class misses a ton. And John Downey, you know, made some lifts and was able to win there. But I'd say 8 or 9 times out of 10, I think this strategy of just being a little bit more conservative and making lifts, you cannot be successful, you know, going 2 for 6, 3 for 6, unless you're just so far ahead of everyone. Like there's no way to win meets making those kind of lifts. You got to go 4, 5, or 6 for 6 if you want to be consistently competing. And you know, even for powerlifting, I think it's the same kind of thing. And I've said it's better to walk away from a lift thinking to yourself, I could have done 5 kilos more, rather than walk away from a miss lift, you know, an incredibly close miss lift, thinking I should have done 2.5 kilos less. So, you know, even though watching Cody do that 137, you know, it would have been easy to say, oh, you know, he could have done 140. He should have done 140. Well, maybe he would have done 140 and just barely missed it, you know, and then we were saying, well, 138 or 139 would have been perfect. Yeah, but 6 for 6 is always it's hard to take anything negative away there.
Yeah, well, it just builds on the next thing, right?
Yeah.
Next meet he does 140, and he's got more in the tank. So
yeah,
very good overall.
Yeah, so that was the next was James Townsend. So James is a 94 kilo class lifter. His second meet back from an elbow surgery, and dealt with some illness going into the meet, but James is just always, you know, nicest guy, hard worker, great team guy,
really, James is one of those guys that embodies all this stuff already that I feel like, you know, I don't know if it's just from years of playing in these kind of organizations, sports, and just a great, great guy. He had some kind of disease that is called Valley Fever, which I thought was like something that you get from being an adult films in San Fernando Valley, but apparently it is not, as I learned. yeah, he just was like basically dead, and then came back to life, and then came out and you know, he did his thing. He actually was, you know, I was really happy with James because he really performed well. He did a fantastic job taking the cues and really trying to change things and make things right. He was so close with PRs on the snatch and the clean and jerk, but just couldn't quite get him. Still went 4 for 6 and had a solid day. And then a funny thing is James' total and Cody's total added up to us winning the men's team third place, I believe, you know, which is an interesting outcome, to say the least.
So
he did great, walked away from it again also with a positive experience. And you know, I think it's good for him because he does a lot of coaching, he sees a lot of kids, and he works with some younger athletes. For him to embody these things and to kind of learn that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he works with the most important young athlete, Princess P.
Yes.
The future star of Team Juggernaut. And
I don't know if Princess listens to this podcast, but James said to me he thinks that Freya, his other daughter, may be more talented than Princess P.
Yeah. Marissa had been thinking that was gonna happen. Either Freya would be even better, or she'd just be a total turd. But once we saw that deadlift video the other day, on point deadlift form for a, you know, 16-month-old or 18-month-old or something,
an infant.
Yeah, for how nice of a guy James is, it's really unfortunate that he has to be so fat and unathletic. Like, I guess some people can't have it all. It's
He's really let himself go. He's really let his body go.
Yeah.
It's shameful, James. So he did great. And then the next day we had the final two lifters, and that was our 75 that went this time. We have 275, obviously Kiana Wells, the other one, but Alex Champ, we sat down with her beforehand. We talked about the strategy. We talked about what we needed to do. Going into that session, we really knew what our chances of placing at each spot were going to be. And we set up, hey, here's the numbers we need to do. Here's the goal. Here's our plan. We're going to stick to it as closely as possible. And she did a fantastic job. She snatched 99 kilos, which is a kilo under her best in a meet, and then took 102 for which would have been a second place, a silver medal in the snatch, and just swung it behind a little bit. It was just a little bit too aggressive on the turnover.
Big pull there.
Right there. Yeah. Looks like she's ready for a lot more. But, you know, sometimes nerves can get to you when you haven't touched those weights every single time or regularly, you know. So we talked about what she needed to work on. In the clean and jerk, she did an awesome job. Her best ever clean and jerk prior to this was in training was 118, but it looked like 1.5 million pounds when she stood up with it during the throes of heavy training and a lot of volume. Came out here, smoked all three attempts, went to 120 kilos for her third, which is a 2 kilo PR, and really just a big weight.
2 kilo lifetime PR, yeah. five kilo meat PR.
Yes. 5 kilo meet PR. I don't believe she's ever actually tried the weight before, but, you know, really awesome. She just has great presence of mind.
She tried 128 at camp.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she couldn't stand. She just racked it, but that was it.
Yeah.
You know, watching the video, I just watched it like a few minutes before this, and it was like, seeing the video from certain angles, it looked easy.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like as much of a grinder as she might have thought it was. And I told her that. I said to her before she lifted, I said, you know, how you feel can't dictate how you perform. You know, it may feel heavy, it may feel hard, you might not feel like you want to do it, but none of that prevents you, or none of that really is an indicator as to whether or not you're going to be successful. So focus on being successful, not how you feel. And she killed it. And, you know, just great form. Third place in the snatch, third place in the clean and jerk, or sorry, third place in the snatch, third place in total, and I believe did she get third in clean and jerk as well?
No.
I don't remember. Yeah,
she
only got total in snatch.
Yeah, snatch and the total. And
yeah.
I mean, she's just made such tremendous progress in the Clean and Jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, you started coaching Alex right after the American Open Championships in December, where she cleaned what was at the time a PR of 108 kilos.
Yeah.
And so 12 kilos on that in the last 6 months. But even, you know, when we were up there in Reno with her and Q in February, she was struggling to stand with 114. You know, I think she made a 111 while we were there. And, you know, she's just very talented, very hard worker, does a great job with the details of training and,
yeah.
and a lot of progress for her and a lot more to be made. So, and then the final lifter of the group.
Final lifter was our girl Alyssa Allen. She's a 90 kilo lifter. She was formerly coached by the infamous Keegan Dillon, boyfriend of Alexandra Lachance. And yeah, she did really well. Same thing with her. You know, this is the first time working with her in person. And you know, we set up just a real simple, straightforward plan. Let's go out there and make your lifts, and let's see what your total is. She walked away with a 5 kilo PR total, made 5 of 6 lifts. She only missed her first snatch purely because of, I think, nerves. You know, she was like a deer in headlights that first attempt, kind of just dialing it all in. It can be hard, you know, when you walk out on stage and there's 17 people in the audience. And, you know, no, I'm just kidding. But, you know, just had to get her stuff together and just executed great after that. Had a good meet. Overall, a very, very solid performance for everybody. We had, you know, a lot of 4 for 6s and above in performances, which is what you're looking for.
Definitely. Well, congrats to you, Coach Ada.
Thank you.
So the other standouts of the weekend, you know, we already mentioned Jordan De La Cruz, her first senior national championship, great lifting by her, 84-107. I think probably the session of the weekend was the 69-kilo women's Kate Vibert versus Meredith Alwine, both junior lifters. Vibert snatching 103, new junior American record. Alwine, you know, huge Clean and Jerks. Both of them are extremely talented, making, you know, the 69-kilo class the last couple of years has been just Maddie Rogers and everyone else. And, you know, and we'll see what the new weight class numbers are, but a lot more talent, a lot more competition in that bodyweight range. And just, you know, indicative of where USA weightlifting, and particularly the women's side, is going. Tons of great, talented young lifters, people who, you know, 6 months ago you might not have heard of, and now,
yeah.
you know, now they're challenging for American records. Sakacia yep. Johnson, the 75-kilo yeah. class champion. Yeah, we got to spend some time with Sakacia at our team training camp. She came out and visited with us in Oakland a few months ago, and just extremely talented, incredible watching her stand up those cleans. I'd imagine there's probably a gasp from the crowd every time she would stand up those cleans and lifted really, you know, solid 103-1. What's she clean and jerk?
127.
Yeah. And
yeah.
Yeah. I think she's going to be one, you know, depending on what these new weight classes are, that really benefits from something a little bit above 75 to see her lift some massive, massive weights. Cause you know, if you haven't watched our vlog from our team training camp up there, yeah, maybe 15 minutes to watch it, but check that out. Particularly the time where we're doing this force plate vertical jump testing in the Cal weight room, and you know all the girls were lined up together doing these kind of warm up vertical jumps, and when Sakacia left the ground, I mean, it was just like a holy shit kind of moment. Because even her standing next to Q and jumping next to Q, as phenomenal an athlete as Q is, Sakacia is at another level of power and explosiveness.
Yeah, just impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the men's side, you know, not the strongest performances. Obviously, you know, on both sides, a lot of lifters not there because of Pan Ams. But But I think the you know, standout of the whole thing would have been the super in the snatch. And what is his name?
Kaiser something. Kaiser. His Instagram handle is Kaiser.
I think his last name starts with a K as well, I think. But learning a little bit more about this guy, he had been a swimmer at the University of Missouri, I believe. 6'9" and snatched 175 kilos, and he's been weightlifting for less than a year.
So,
that definitely a name to keep an eye on, and some exciting stuff there in the supers.
He was the first time I've seen an American super where I thought, wow, this guy looks like he could contend with, this guy looks like he's going to contend with the rest of the field. Just the velocity the bar has when it gets up, in the snatch, when the bar's, it must be going 10 meters a second. The thing is just flying. So he's going to be really exciting to watch develop, and he's got a great club and coach out there too.
So that was that's 2018 Nationals, in a lot of ways sort of an end of an era for USA weightlifting and weightlifting as a whole. As soon we will be talking about new weight classes. We'll probably do some sort of predictions about those, maybe a prediction contest even of guessing the new weight classes. There's going to be some new international team qualifying procedures that come along with that. Be prepared to hear a lot about something called a ROBI score, R-O-B-I score, which when we know what that is better, we will let you know. But Max, any other closing thoughts?
Nothing really. Overall, I will say USAW has done a fantastic job organizing this thing. It just gets better and better every time, and our whole team, just super proud of everyone for showing up and being part of the team and buying into everything we're doing and we're trying. Overall, just a really fantastic group of people.
All right. So this is the Jug Life Podcast. You can find us on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. If you like it, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that, and it helps more people find the show. Subscribe to our YouTube, which thanks to the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang, is pumping out 3-4 sometimes now 5 and 6 videos per week. So tons of great content there, powerlifting, weightlifting, podcasts, Jug Life, Beers with Chad, Strength History Minutes, all kind of stuff. So go and subscribe to the Juggernaut Train Systems YouTube. If you're interested in coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, strongman, super total, or power building, visit juggernautcoaching.com and check out the multiple levels of programs we have, whether you're a beginner or, trying to fight for making international teams like Alyssa Ritchie. We've got something right for you, so go ahead and check that out. Upcoming events. Next week, Max and I will be up in Calgary as our better halves compete at the IPF Classic Worlds. Joanne will be in the 63 kilo Masters and Marissa defending her 52 kilo World Championship. And then we've got some Canadian seminars going on. So I know you're so cool that all your seminars in Calgary are sold out, right, Max?
I'm sold out for that weekend.
Well, congratulations, big man, sold out seminars. I got a couple spots left. I'll be on June 10th in Vancouver, Sunday, June 10th at Dynasty Gym in Vancouver. You can sign up for that in the events section at store.jtsstrength.com. Beyond that, Max and I will be in Texas the weekend of June 22nd and 23rd. On June 22nd, we'll be at Arlington Strength in Arlington, Texas for a free squat clinic and then a Jug Life Live episode. And the next day, Saturday the 23rd, we will be at D-Town CrossFit in Dallas, Texas for a free snatch clinic and Jug Life Live episode. So those are free. So you just gotta save your spot at, under events at store.jtsstrength.com. And last event on the schedule, August 19th in Long Island, Max, myself, Dr. Quinn, Dr. Mike, and Dr. James will be presenting the 2018 Juggernaut Performance Summit, which really covers everything you need to know to get strong and fast and lean and all that kind of good stuff.
Yep.
Program design, technique, nutrition, mobility, and recovery, all in one action-packed day. Plus, you can get some CEUs for the NSCA if you're into that kind of thing. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or on Facebook. You can email me if you have any questions about the online training or how it goes at max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. This was the Jug Life Podcast. Also be on the lookout for more Beers with Chad episodes, and we'll see you next week.